Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello and welcome. You've tuned into a conversation among artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guests. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Well, hello once again, and welcome. Every year about this time, the Riversance Arts Festival looks out over the landscape of area artists and gallerists and teachers, art teachers, and chooses one or sometimes two to be the winner of the Harley Award. The Harley Award is an artistic achievement award, often given for lifetime achievement. And this year, we have the first announcement of this year's winner, 2014 Harley Award, and it goes to Megan Quinn and Kristen Quinn, sisters. Megan is out of Maryland University, went to Notre Dame MFA, and teaches clay at Augustana, and Kristen, the Tyler School of Art in Philadelphia, a BFA, and an MFA in painting from Indiana University, and they're here with us. This year's winners of the Harley Award. And Kristen and Megan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you.
And you're each going to get your own statue. So we're not going to have it cut in half for you. Where you can, or one between
it. We're going to fight over the top.
With both of your names on it, and you can pass it around. It'll be terrific. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's really terrific. Your effect. Is that an E effect or an A effect on the Quad City artists and on all your students passing through? And your presence here in the community has been great for both of you. I know my wife has taken a class from you, Megan, and I've seen your work countless times in the galleries. And you did Riversance once too, I think,
years ago.
Yeah, those funky pots. And I have a bowl of, that I have my sugar in. And for one of your pots. And unfortunately, Kristen, I don't have one of your big paintings because I don't have the room. But do you work small?
I do work small.
Oh,
also.
I'd like to see
but
some
you can't
of those.
Put sugar in my
paintings. No, that's fine. That's fine.
You're not functional.
Your paintings are sweet enough.
Thank you.
Anyway, Megan Quinn and Kristen Quinn, this is just really very cool having you here and to have you be the winners of this year's.
I think we're humbled by the award. I think it really.
Well, you know, John
really
and
good.
Isabel Bloom, Father Kaddish, the watercolor artist who died at Augustana, at Ambrose, Schmidt. John Schmidt won posthumous. Chateau. Thomasia Lloyd.
Yeah. So it's really, really fine company.
It is. Oh, you guys are an excellent company. Yeah. It's like you're the cream of the crop of the Quad City artists. It's just marvelous to have you guys here. Bill Hannon has one. It goes back quite a few. There are a couple of people before I came onto the committee that I don't know about. There was a woman in Geneseo that I didn't know who died previously. But there are lots of really wonderful artists who have won this. Watercolor artists, Ralph won it. There was an award at Quad City Arts for a watercolor painting. Sally McMillan.
Oh, right.
And Ruth Evelyn Katz, she won it also. And she had that gallery downtown.
Make a
gallery. Uh-huh. When I first came to town, I was like, wow, all the work in there was great. And they really kept art alive. For the 50s and the 60s and the 70s until until you guys came, and then now you're doing it. Anyway, congratulations. I think it's very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Next week on Saturday, September 20th, is the award ceremony, probably about 12:30 or so, during a break between the bands, 12 o'clock to 12:30, somewhere in there there's a break, and we'll come up on stage and give you the statues, and you're going to be saying a few words to all of us, words of wisdom or words of affirmation or words of hope. Or
we might sing.
Really?
You never know.
Oh, that would be good.
You never know with the Quins.
Oh, really? That's true.
Probably not, though.
Probably not. Oh, that would be great if no one's ever sung before like that. That would be great.
Hmm.
No?
My students say no.
Okay, happy trails or something. Yeah. Anyway, here you are. So let's find out more about you. Kristen, let's start with you. You're a painting teacher. You teach painting. You're also doing work this semester as chairman of the department. That's a rotating position. It goes around. You have it for a year or 2 years? Or
5 years.
5 years?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So. Oh, that cuts into your...
But I have a good crew.
You do?
Really
yeah,
crew,
you do.
So
yeah, it's a really good department over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody over there is good. I don't know anybody who's not. They're just terrific people over there. So how do you find time to do your work while you're doing all this other work?
Well,
you have a studio there.
Yes, I do. I have a studio at Ambrose, and I work. Fridays are pretty wide open, and weekends, evenings, those are...
You're a weekend painter, then.
Oh, don't call me a Sunday painter. But I try to fit it in as much as
I can. Peter Chow said that. He said he turned into a weekend painter because he's so busy during the week.
Yeah, it is a busy time, but...
beginning of the semester.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting everybody off.
Yeah, I have a huge painting class, a beginning painting class, so that's kind of fun. Show them which end of the brush to use.
No, okay. So, oh gosh.
So that's a good thing. But I'm trying to. During the school year, I probably paint smaller, so I can make things happen quicker.
Mm.
So then in the summer, I'll paint bigger. So.
Oh, you take summers off then?
No, I don't take them off. I just work bigger.
Oh, but you have time to work.
Yeah. So I'll work on bigger paintings.
Bigger paintings, okay. Yeah. Gestural paintings.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and your work, if for those of you who don't know about it, very large, layered, so it seems to be some sort of, the last time I saw it at the Caddish Gallery there, some sort of landscapey thing going through with these occasional intrusions or layers of what looks like a stencil of some pattern going through, and generally in black or in some other color. The colors are gorgeous. There are surprises throughout, sometimes drips, sometimes introductions of other, like, little elements coming through. So sometimes the surprising colors, like a lime green or a bright red or something like that.
Well, I think of them like landscape paintings. That's how I think of them. Other people would say, where's the barn? But I think a lot of the elements do come from places that I like to hang out. So
in the country?
I like to look at birds. And so a lot of times that idea of what the color is on the river at sunset or sunrise, it can be pink, it can be bright green if it's blooming with duckweed. So the colors that seem synthetic, I think they're totally natural.
Really?
Because they come from like seeing a particular color of light through trees.
Nature.
Yeah.
Nature. So, do you photograph these or remember them?
No, I don't. I do photograph some, but memory, a lot of it is that.
Huh. Do you trust your subconscious then to record these?
I think it's more conscious.
Is it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Just a particular memory. So.
Huh. I've always trusted my subconscious more than my conscious.
Oh.
So I throw them in there, into the subconscious, and then they come out, gosh knows where from. Uh-huh. But my conscious brain is adequate, but it's not something that I really want to play with. Are you unconscious, Megan?
She's quite conscious right now.
She's unconscious right now. Well, then let's continue. Sorry to throw that out there.
Sorry. We're both unconscious.
Okay, you're doing well.
Thanks.
So landscapes, landscape colors, landscape forms, they seem almost end of the worldish, your landscapes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when I see them, I see
apocalyptic.
Yeah, apocalyptic.
Wow.
I get that sense from them.
Huh.
It's an odd thing because sometimes I think you have these ship structures or these kind of bridge structures, but they look almost mossy or as if they're covered with mm-hmm. plants, and it seems as if they have been deteriorating for 100 years and they're being overgrown by nature. I remember many years ago when I was traveling on the Trans-Amazonian Highway, I saw that these workers will come and they've paved the road. They've plowed it, but they've made the road. But the jungle encroaches so quickly uh-huh. onto the road that they have to constantly be chopping it back. And with yours, it almost seems like the jungle is overtaking your steel man-made structures.
I think they just kind of coexist. There are layers of industry. There are layers of organic forms and trees and... Sometimes you're right, ships come in. But lately, we just had a show together at Blackhawk last year. Tales of Root Boy and Blossom Deary was the title of the show. And we hadn't seen each other's work until the show. And so we put it up, and it was interesting to see kind of commonalities in form. And so that's the first time I've showed the smaller work that is... Huh. It has, I don't know if it's apocalyptic. I think it's more sweet and hopeful. Lots of circus tents that kind of turn into roads, turn into banners, meander through a space. A lot of tree forms and bud forms. And then Megan, her work changed radically. We both went to Spain together, so
ooh.
That might. We were probably looking ooh. At the same things, but we took them different ways.
Yeah. Oh, talk about that.
Well, I think in Spain, I discovered Hieronymus Bosch, and
at the Prado.
Uh huh. And I never really, seeing it in person is so much different than seeing it in an art history text or a book somewhere. I was so amazed at the. Fantastic sort of plant forms, which he maybe uses as architectural forms. And they're sort of, there's the subtext, I guess, is sort of about heaven and hell, but the fellow painted in the 1600s, and it looked like he knew Salvador Dali or something.
Surrealist, yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, I was starting to think about, his... organic form and term, and then trying to make it dimensional.
Hieronymus Bosch, you're taking off from Hieronymus Bosch as your source?
I don't think it went all that far, but not yet anyway. But I was messing around with it. And then I started thinking, what's that guy's name? Blossfeldt.
Carl Blossfeldt.
Carl Blossfeldt. He was a photographer in the 1900s, and he kind of invented like a macro lens for photography, and he took all these sort of really interesting photos of plants mostly. And they're not always recognizable. They're very beautiful abstractions. So then I was kind of riffing on his forms because they were simpler than actually the forms that Bosch.
Plant-like forms?
Mm-hmm.
So you're both working with plant-like forms.
Megan almost was a botanist at University of Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gosh, how interesting.
Not that close, but I considered it.
The door was open.
Yeah.
But you didn't take it.
No.
So you're still interested in botanical forms.
Love them.
Plants. Plants are great. Do you have a lot of plants?
I do.
There you go. Do you ever draw them? I mean, is that a source? Do you guys draw?
Do you draw?
Do you? Do you keep a sketchbook?
I don't keep a sketchbook. When I travel, I take a sketchbook.
Uh-huh.
But I do mixed media little pieces.
Really?
Collages. Lately, that's what I've been doing. Or I do large layer drawings that are mostly black and white.
Huh. I didn't know that.
As a sketch.
I use them not as a sketch for anything other than just when you first go into your studio, I think it's it's hard to get started, so I have to give myself an assignment. So sometimes I'll time myself and say I've got an hour to start and I have to stay on this. You know, if it's a work on paper, I don't treat it as preciously as... I mean, I tell my students it's kind of like clearing your throat before you sing. It's like, it's just don't worry, just go in and do something.
Huh.
And don't think about it as art. They turn out as art in the end, but I don't... I'm trying not to be really self-conscious when I'm making them. Hmm. So, but... Though I was doing large works on paper, and now they're smaller mixed media collages. I've been cutting up a lot of books. Oh, sorry about that. But navigation books and old maps and painting, collaging. Nobody's seen them, but.
Gosh, that's nice. Yeah. How do you affix them? Mod Podge?
Yes, glue.
Yes, glue.
Yes, glue.
Yes, glue, yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh huh. Some sort of adhering acrylic, adhering liquid?
No. They're probably not going to last very long, they're kind of fun to do. But it's just like the first part of being in the studio, to give yourself something that's like, okay, I can do this. It's little, it's quick.
Oh, that's
and then
good.
You sneak into the paintings.
That you give yourself an assignment like mm-hmm. that, and you kind of warm up to it,
right.
And you kind of get yourself...
Yeah, it's
up
like doing
speed.
Scales before you, you know.
Oh, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. You just don't just jump into it.
It's too much pressure if you have to just go in and make art.
Yeah, that would be something, because then you have to get up to speed right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's good. And then from there you slide off into your paintings.
Uh-huh.
You're kind of, and your paintings are the same size or bigger?
No, they're varied sizes. They're from 16 to 20 right now up to 4 by 5 feet. And sometimes I'll work on just one, or sometimes I'll work on all of them. Try to make myself do one thing to each of them, or sometimes I'll just focus on one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I do the two. You go back and forth between them.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see something. You just kind of stare at them for hours. Do you have a sketch of your picture, or do you just kind of lay into it, or do you preliminary draw it out? Charcoal.
Sometimes I photograph the painting and then take it into Photoshop and work on it that way. That's been new. It's a quicker way for me to make ideas change, go through an idea like, should the tree be this way? Should it be red? Should it be... So I can, when I leave the studio, I can be working on a painting quickly, like to try things out.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I think the ship painting, it's actually going to be in the Figge show. I think that's the one you're referring to, but,
uh-huh.
but I... in order to get up the nerve to put the ship in the way it was in, I had to kind of visualize it in Photoshop. So I'd try it, tilted it this way, torqued it this way, made it blue. And
wow.
then finally, like this, so I could come in with my computer and look at that and say, yep, that's it, and then paint it.
And the translation is good from the computer to paint?
Well, I refer to it. I'm not a slave to it. So it's almost like you're just trying it on.
How interesting.
And then... make it happen.
How interesting. So you're not using a photograph per se, but you're using a computer
mm-hmm.
photograph, and you're changing the colors.
But it's a photograph of my painting.
Right.
That I'm importing things
right.
into.
Oh, that's very interesting. What an interesting way of working. I've never heard of that before.
I'm kind of not so tech savvy, so I ask my students for help a lot. With things like that.
If you want to know something technical, you always ask the younger generation.
Yes.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, we're speaking with Megan and Kristen Quinn. Megan is an Augustana professor of clay, and Kristen is a St. Ambrose professor of painting, and also chair for a few years. And they both have won this year's 2014 Riversance Harley Award. So let's take a short break right now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Augustana College Art Museum through October 25th, A Different Way of Seeing, Swedish Art from the Charters Collection. Hours are noon to 4, Tuesday through Saturday. In the Art Space Gallery in Building 4 on the Blackhawk College campus in Moline through September 19th, paintings by David Murray. Hours are 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport in the Morrissey Gallery through September 28th. Mixed Media Works by Heather Baker. Hours are 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday. In the Kanich Gallery from September 10th through October 24th, book works by Brian Borkert and quilts by Eric Wolfmeyer. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. At the Figge Art Museum on West 2nd Street in Davenport through September 14th, from pencil to printed page, Arthur Geisert's Thunderstorm. Through October 26th, Living Proof, works by cancer survivors and patients. Through November 2nd, Two Americans in Paris, Stuart Davis and Grant Wood. Through January 25th, Turned Wood. And through April 30th, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through September 30th, drawings by Ann Kaufman and mixed media works by Isaias Mejia. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, 9 to 5 Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of October, acrylics by Dan Johnson and jewelry by Monica Shans. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At the Bucktown Center for the Arts on East 2nd Street in Davenport through the end of October, photography by Richard Kluhl and Matthew Terry. Hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 11 to 6. At the Quad City Arts Gallery on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through October 24th, Good Enough to Eat, an art buffet. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays from 11 to 5. At Quad City Arts at the Airport in the Moline International Airport through October 30th, mixed media works by Kimberly Roca, collages by Amber Williams, and stoneware by Dale DeVoki. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
On Art Talks, Megan and Christian Quinn are with us, this year's winner of the Harley Awards. Megan is at Augustana and Christian is at St. Ambrose. We were talking about forms and how they evolve and where you come from, and we got on a conversation of upbringing and how important that is, I think, in your life. I know my own upbringing was hugely informative into my life. It's just a big tributary. It just flows right in the patterns that I did, the ocean, the traveling, the music, the things that you see, the experiences you're exposed to. And I think Camus, I think, was the one who said it. He said, every artist is trying to recreate the three or four peak experiences, a different word he used, peak experiences that they experienced as a child. The water, the mountains, the air, the magnificence of seeing something in person, of seeing a painting in person, or of hearing music, or going, I could do that, I want to do that, or, you know, of seeing something pop and fizzle and go, yes, that's for me. There's a coffee roaster that I know who went into the basement of a huge roasting place in Chicago, and he was like just so overwhelmed with the smell and the beauty of it that he said, that's what I'm going to do. It was like, oh my gosh. And I remember for myself going through museums with my father and seeing these spectacular paintings, and it was like, and when my father started whispering, oh, Bruce, look at this. It was like, oh my gosh, there must be something valuable here. And it was my first kind of open doorway into art, because this was something worthy and noble and beautiful. And it made my father excited to be showing it to me. It's like, wow, how interesting. Mm-hmm. So is there an experience like that? You both grew up in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
What was that like?
And it was so we didn't know, I don't think, until we moved away to go to school, how crazy an experience it was just to be part of that culture, because all the museums are free and there's so much to see. And our parents really enjoyed that part of Washington. So they, early on, we were going to museums with them. And then in our youth, you know, we lived probably, I'd say half an hour from the city. And we would always take the buses downtown on the weekends. Just, I don't know that we ever really had a plan. We'd just wander in and out of museums. And then in the summer, they always had the Folklife Festival, and they'd have a culture group set up in the middle of the National Mall. And so there'd be musicians and artists and cooks, and they were just there for people to get to know, basically. And we were sort of like professional loiterers, I think. We would just go hang around and mingle and it was pretty wild.
Did this influence your art? I mean, did this lead you toward being an artist? Or?
Well, I think it just, even though our parents weren't artists, they always had the attitude of go everywhere, see everything, take it all in. And they are my dad just died, but my mom to this day is a person you couldn't get her out of a museum very fast. Mm-mm. She doesn't like prioritize. She just looks at everything and reads every label. And but we have become more able to prioritize, and we have a little bit more idea of what we want to see and go to that, so that we can, you know, eat food and do some exercising and
you have
teach
to have blinders.
Classes. Yeah, we do some other things besides museums.
Gosh, what a wonderful upbringing you had then.
Yeah, free museums.
Free museums in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I don't know. My parents would just drop us. Like, I remember being 11, and and I was dropped at the Corcoran Museum School, and I took life drawing classes at 11.
Life drawing?
Yeah. I don't think they knew what was going on.
You probably looked 18.
No, I didn't. And I was the littlest one in the class. And then I would wander around, and then my dad would come get me. Usually Saturdays, he'd come get me at 5 o'clock, so I'd be in the National Gallery or...
How fun. And this was just like assumed. This was your upbringing.
I remember when my dad dropped me off at one of the Vietnam War demonstrations. And he said, call me if you get arrested. Otherwise, take the bus home.
Yeah, a lot of love there.
Oh, golly. Here's a quarter to make a phone call. Oh, gosh. So your parents just like deliberately exposed you to all this stuff. What did your parents do?
It might have been benign neglect.
Really?
No. Okay. I mean, they were pretty active in the community. They were activists. They were rabble-rousers, really, really involved in the civil rights movement.
Ah, good.
And really helped integrate the schools during the civil rights time. So they were really, I think, participants in culture and in politics.
And they wanted you to discover it too.
Yeah, so I think I worked on the McGovern campaign was my first campaign. What was your first campaign?
LBJ? I remember wearing an LBJ hat to school and getting made fun of. A cardboard LBJ hat.
Huh. So you probably listened to a lot of Pete Seeger.
We went to his concerts all the time.
Did you?
And Arlo Guthrie. Yeah, I played some on Labor Day the other day.
Did you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I remember those days. Alice's Restaurant.
Yep.
Yeah, all those things.
Yeah, we did, lots of that.
That's like another era. So you had hip parents, didn't you?
I think so. My mom, she had the caftans.
And she could make fondue.
Fondue and caftans.
So there was no way that you guys couldn't have been artists then?
I don't know. You know, Dad was a scientist. And she kind of had to fight for us to be in the arts. My dad, he bristled at it sometimes. Hmm. Said, you know, how are you going to make a living?
Hmm.
But she was really, I think, a champion. I mean, he was certainly a supporter of what we did and you know, a great fan of our work, but he was pretty practically minded.
Hmm. What did he want you to be?
Well, I think for me, I went to art school, and I lied a little bit. I said, I want to study design. And I really hated those classes because it was old-timey. It was paste up and waxing,
products,
stat cameras. Yeah. And I took a painting class, and I was just totally in love. Because it was so challenging, I really love that. So,
What, and your father wanted you to be a botanist?
No, I don't think he ever said a word to me that I remember about what to do with myself. Maybe he thought being a potter was okay. I don't know.
Because you're making something useful.
Yeah, sugar bowls.
Mm-hmm. Sugar bowls.
Sugar bowls.
There you go. Yeah, and casserole dishes.
I don't remember him having any opinion at all about which way I went. It's sort of weird. But he did buy me a fancy camera one time. When I was interested in photography. That was about the most of a push I got in any direction. So maybe he saw what I did and then he thought he'd have to warn Kristen.
Oh, yeah.
Coming
hard road.
Yeah. I'll get you a camera, too.
Give me a camera.
Oh, interesting. Well, what a place. So then you went off to college in Maryland and in Philadelphia, not too far from home, mm-hmm. but not Washington. What was it like in college?
Well, Maryland's really, it was just down the road, a different direction. It was still, I guess, the College Park was still about a half an hour from, so I didn't go far at all to college. But Kristen went off in another direction.
Yeah.
Philadelphia, mm-hmm. that's still not that far.
Mm-hmm. No, and it's nice, it was right between New York and D.C. Mm-hmm. and.
Did you go to New York a lot?
Yeah.
There was
a bus that would take us to New York, and it was like $5.
Golly.
So we went like once a month, we'd go to New York.
That's right, go to all the galleries?
Mm-hmm.
Huh, what did you see?
Oh, Guston. I mean, everything at those times, but, you know,
I've never
Whitney.
Quite understood Guston, Philip Gusto.
We'll
he taught
it.
At Iowa.
Talk about that on the next
On
tour.
The next show, okay.
We'll have a lesson.
Okay. Huh. So what's the big deal about him?
Beautiful paint.
Well, yeah.
Wonderful storyteller.
Oh, storyteller.
Lovely colors.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
okay, you've summarized him up. I remember having a long talk with my son about late Rothko, not early, but late Rothko, and he was like almost incensed that you, how you could get away with just some rectangles of color. I was like, oh, no, it's emotion and feeling and squeezing the world into these emblematic forms and colors. And it was like, now my son loves Rothko. I mean, this years later, I think you have to kind of grow into him. For instance, Kandinsky. You know, like late Kandinsky, the stuff he's famous for, the circles and the triangles and the overlapping forms. It's like, but early Kandinsky, with those kind of gauzy landscapes and mythological Russian stories. Mm. It's like they're just gorgeous. It's like, forget late Kandinsky. I like early Kandinsky.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. So, well, that's all from our friend that you like, that I didn't explain. Oh, not Gustav.
Gustav.
It's like, yeah, what's the deal with him?
He's a painter's
painter.
I like him too, though.
Do you really?
But I might have been educated by Kristen about
him. Maybe. And
but
painter's
I think
painter.
Very sweet paintings.
Well, they seem.
But I kind of know some biographical
clunky
details.
And
oh, they're human.
A clunky human.
Yeah.
He's kind of, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Well, what about Morandi? If you're a painter's painter.
Well, he's one of my gods.
Really?
Yeah.
You're like, explain Morandi.
what time do we have? I think there are profound paintings. They seem to be one thing and then they become others. They look like bottles, but they become landscapes.
People?
Figurative, yeah. Uh-huh. They're figurative, they're landscape, they're abstract, and it's for a painter, they're just beautiful paint. They're very poetic little paintings. I went to his museum in Bologna, and they had a recreation of his studio, and I walked into it and I started crying. It's like, there's the picture that he painted. My husband had to talk me down. Like, but it's the picture. I didn't know it was that big.
Oh, they are? No, they're small, aren't they?
Well, the picture is bigger than his paintings. Oh. It was like an 18-inch picture. And in his paintings, it's always this big. It's
right.
Like a little duck.
Oh, the picture. Okay, got yeah. it.
The pouring picture.
Okay, the
Sorry
pouring
about
picture.
That.
Yeah. He used to paint his jars and pitchers, too. He used to paint on them to change them colors.
He liked to get them dusty.
Dusty.
So the edges would soften.
Oh.
Yeah. But Megan, maybe I liked Mirandi because my sister's a potter. You know?
Forms, those three-dimensional forms.
Beautiful vessels.
Huh.
And arrangements of them. Mm-hmm.
And the arrangements of them, too, like mm-hmm. a still life?
Yeah.
Or like a family
and
portrait?
Like Kristen said, just this shift between what is the positive shape and what is the negative shape is so subtle and interesting in those paintings of bottles and jars.
Huh. Interesting, because with Mirandi, it's like I see the paint go around the jar sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, from the background.
And that
like
could become the object instead of the jar. So I think
the paint
tricky,
going around?
Tricky little paintings.
Oh. Huh. And they turn into something else.
Well, I think they morph. So a bottle can be a bottle. It also can be a void. It can be a negative space, too, the way he plays with the edges, plays with the direction of the mark.
Hmm.
But I was a snooty art student at Tyler, and I saw the Mirandi show in, I think it was 80. It was a retrospective in 83 or 82 at the Guggenheim. I was just like, no, let's go to Soho. Let's not go to see that bottle painter. And I went to the show, and I was just so profoundly moved. You know, like, totally taken by the work. So that was my hook. It was just
seeing them in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great show. So then the pilgrimage started. So each time I go back to Italy, it's like I go to Bologna.
How fun. He's got a museum there. Mm-hmm. He's not alive still, is he?
No.
Yeah, he's gone. Mm-hmm. I hear he was very tall. He was a tall person. And that he would make his arrangements on a shelf.
Yeah, it was up high and it tilted.
Tilted.
Yeah, the way he put his still life table leaned. So that's why there's a weird teetering in his
perspective.
Oh, that's
interesting. Huh.
I think.
All the things that people do. Yeah, I wonder if Cezanne's tables were like that, too.
They're like a fun house.
Yeah, it's like Uncle Walty's Cezanne room. Well, we're speaking with Megan and Kristen Quinn, and we're talking about painting and favorite
pots.
Painters. But, painting's wonderful stuff to talk about. And let's take another break. We'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Geneseo Art League Gallery on South State Street in Geneseo, wood art show, works by Jim Dayton, Bob Benson, Carl Smith, and Warren Hadley. Hours are 11 to 5 Wednesday through Saturday. At the Renee Gray Gallery on South Cody Road in the Clare through September 28th, A Personal Perspective, Finding Beauty in the Unexpected, works by Lee Kimball and other artists. Hours are 11 to 5 every day except Sunday. At Roz Talks on 3rd Avenue in Rock Island, on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence, works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 to 1 a.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the Galesburg Civic Arts Center at 114 East Main Street in Galesburg, through September 16th, Galesburg High School Art Student Honorees, from September 12th through October 18th, works by Joyce and Jeffrey Gellick. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10:30 to 4:30, Saturday from 10:30 to 3. At the Buchanan Center for the Arts on the Square in Monmouth through October 25th, the Security Savings Bank Photo Competition. Hours are 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, Saturdays from 10 to 2. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5. Thursday evening, 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque through October 19th, Modern Landscapes, paintings by Grant William Tye. Through November 30th, Homage to the Tall Grass Prairie, watercolors by George Olson. The Grant Wood Gallery on continuing exhibit. Hours are Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10 to 5, Thursdays until 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 4. At the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art at 410 3rd Avenue in Cedar Rapids through November 2nd, Marvin Cohn, On My Mind, The Ceramics of Dean Schwartz. On continuing exhibit, Art in Roman Life, Grant Wood in Focus, and Maurizio Lozanski, Master Printmaker. Hours are Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4, Thursdays 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., Sundays noon to 4. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Talks. Megan and Kristen Quinn are with us, both this year's winner of the 2014 Harley Award from the Renaissance Arts Festival. The presentation will be next Saturday, the 20th, about 12:30 at the bandstand, and they'll both be receiving their individual statues. This is our first presentation of the announcement of their winning. This program and many, many previous programs going back about 2 years are available on our website, WVIK.org. Click on the schedule button at the top of the page and scroll on down to Art Talks on Thursday nights at 7, and they'll appear by date, name of the artists, and a brief description of what they do. But back to painting. There are certain paintings that you know drop you to your knees, that you the ground falls, slips away underneath you, and you're completely moved. And fortunately, sometimes, like in the Art Institute, there's an Innes, George Innes landscape, large Innes landscape, and right in front of it, there's a bench that you can sit down to catch yourself. And I just, it's just, I don't know what it is about Innes, but he's really great. They just, whew, I'm gone. Mm-hmm. It's just a marvelous, and cue the waterworks. It just starts tearing up, and my wife and I have teared up in front of a Renoir piano player, a girl playing piano, and just it just glows, and it's just so beautiful. It's mm-hmm. just gorgeous. And there are a couple of others that you just are so moved. And there was a sculptor who went to and saw the David and with a group, and she suddenly just burst into tears. And another painter I know who was in Rome and went to see the Sistine Chapel and just burst into tears. And of course, when you see Elvis or the Beatles, you would burst into tears too. But it's the Stendhal effect, you cry in the presence of beauty. It'd be better to have had a more a lovelier name than the Stendhal effect. You know, it's like, but it's like the lugubrious tears effect or something. What could you call
it? I don't think that's
better. No, it's too many words. But has that happened to you? You have paintings that you're absolutely moved, or forms that you're absolutely moved by?
I think I'm more moved by forms.
Forms?
Yeah.
Like of a bowl?
She's a three-dimensional girl.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And
I'm the flat girl.
I mean, I think I've had a lot of experiences like that, but early on, I think I had just started in making ceramics and sculpture, and I was walking by a gallery, and it was in Washington, D.C., and they had an exhibit of Richard DeVore's ceramic work, and he taught in Colorado. I'm never quite sure if it was Colorado State or the University of Colorado, because I never met him when, you know, like stalked him or anything. But these works were so expressive and so beautiful. It was really hard to leave them. And I think you you leave that wanting to propel yourself to make something so beautiful that other people will have that response.
Nice, nice. That's great.
But
yeah.
I don't know that I ever have made anything like that. But but DeVore was an early influence for me. And then later on, maybe, I tell people this is a funny story because it was before the internet and Google. And I had seen a show, I think it was in the National Gallery of Cycladic Art and Sculpture. And they make, this is 4000 BC in the Greek Isles, and they make beautiful figurative works out of stone, and then they made beautiful pottery too, like so elegant. You couldn't believe it was 4000 BC. So I decided, well, I'd like to go see that. And I made a reservation to one of the Cycladic Islands. I don't know which one. And they didn't have a museum, and there was nothing left on the island. And I had to go to Athens to the National Museum in Greece to find the work. But it was like totally stupid, you know, to just figure it would be where it was made. But at any rate, but I did get to see it. And it doesn't usually leave Greece.
How big are they? They're like dolls, aren't they? They're like tiny.
They make some of the sculpture. I think the biggest I've seen them was maybe 3 feet tall. So I guess that's a thing. I've always just appreciated aesthetically, and I've never really looked into the meaning of it, you know, whether it was effigies or, I don't know, how it was used. I mean, the pottery is obvious, but the form of it is like no other. It's just so beautiful.
Surprising. It's like super modern, clean-lined, incised forms that you could wrap up in a hide and put in your backpack and carry with you. Very, very non-protruding forms, but almost like dolls, I think.
Right.
It's like, I wonder if kids played with them.
I don't know. They were made out of marble a lot.
Yeah. So they probably wouldn't break, and wood would deteriorate, and bark would be maybe too much trouble or something. But I'm always amazed how people that lived before us came up with these splendid forms. It's like, how did you learn that? You never went to grad school. it's like, well, who taught you these forms? And there must have been some apprenticeship going down through the ages where these people would do that, or even cave paintings, you know. Well, Kristen, who are you looking at now? Who moves you now? I mean, is there some painter, maybe even in the past, besides Morandi?
Well, actually, I was just thinking of Megan talking about travel made me think about, like, the most amazing places. And I think certainly the Spain trip we took was great to see some of the El Grecos that I didn't know were there. And I think that's sometimes the Stendhal thing, or that if you don't know a piece is in a particular place and you come upon it, I a lot of times I go to my knees, like, what are you doing here, Caravaggio? I like to expect it. Like, I really like to expect when I'm going to see the Piero della Francesca. So Piero, I'm going to butcher the town, but it's in a city hall, and there's a really famous resurrection painting, and they were closed for lunch. And I thought, oh, okay, shoot, I'll just wait. And so I walked around to the piazza to wait for it to reopen, and they had a glass wall put in so that bus tours could come. And it was like, it took all my thunder, because I was like, no, I want to approach it. I just don't want to see it. Like, it's a peep show through a window.
How interesting. Yeah, so, you wanted it more precious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it took...
Tourists.
I know. So...
The Mona Lisa. Yeah, it's just crowded, you know.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, who would I bother?
But there's a Piero baptism in England that's at the National Gallery that's beautiful. It's just beautiful painting, and it's installed in a way that you kind of approach it. I love the dramatic approach. I love that. And so you see it at the end of the gallery, then you go into another, then you see a peek of it, and then you finally get to it.
Nice. What is so beautiful about Piero, besides the stillness and the quietness?
Well, I mean, I think they're incredibly intricate compositions, and they're very human. I mean, Giotto, I love very much, but Piero, the way he composes a space and builds drama. So if there's a horse fight, if there's a fight, the way it's designed is so beautiful. Hmm. So I've been up...
The grammar of it, then. Yeah,
well, yeah, and just how they're funny, too. Like, you'll be looking at this horse, and you realize there's a man between those legs. Hmm. Where did that come from? Hmm. So they're very odd, too. Hmm. So...
Did you ever see the Last Supper when you were in Italy?
Uh-huh.
Really? What was that like? Because I have to walk to an airlock, I think, to get into it, don't you?
Not when I was there. That was my worst Italian translation. I thought I was asking everybody, where's the Last Supper? L'ultima cena? And I was asking for the last dinner. Everywhere I went, the last dinner. And they have
good restaurant down
the street. They have a sweet name. It's called the Cinicola. And that's what you ask for.
Cinicola.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's
like
something
gone, isn't it?
It's nothing much there.
Yeah.
They were working on the restoration when I was there. It was years ago.
Watercolor, like they're putting on it now.
Yeah, so it was half covered.
By bother. Yeah.
But
Gosh, all these things. Did you go to Rome? Did you explore Rome?
I got to go to school there.
Really? A year abroad?
Yeah, I was the spoiled of the kids. I was the last one, and I think they were just tired, and so they sent me where I wanted to go.
Oh.
And all the other children are mad about that, probably.
Oh, really?
To this day. She got to go to Rome to school. She went to an art school.
You didn't? Oh, that's right. You went to...
No, I think our brother, who's the oldest, went to a private school his first year of college. He went to the New School in Florida. It's the old Ringling Brothers Museums,
right.
Was the housed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was this pretty radical free school. And I think, I don't know what my parents, where the money was going to come from, but they let him go. But then after the first year, they didn't have any more money. And he, I guess he didn't think it was worth it or something. Mm. So then the next three of us went to Maryland, the University of Maryland. And my brother finished out at the University of Maryland, which was a great school. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad for the education I got there. I am.
Any school, I think, is what you put into it. And, you know, the mentors that you meet along the way. Kinsey, I think, was that for me at Notre Dame. And he was marvelous. He just really affected my life. And I had a couple of other teachers, like in high school, who just threw me up into space. It's like, oh my gosh, I can fly.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
But so I think you'll find them probably just about anywhere, don't you think?
Yeah, even at Augustana.
Well, that's because you're there. How many students have you guys affected? I think it's marvelous. Do your students come back to visit you?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do they say?
Hello.
After that, what do they say?
I think thanks to the internet
and
Facebook, we do stay in touch with
Facebook.
We stay in touch with a lot of our students. But they've gone out and done great things. So
are they designers or artists or painters or potters?
Everything.
Yeah. There was a interview I read about with Brian Eno, who was that kind of synthesizing kind of sound, and he said he went to art school. I was like, you did? And he said, what I went to art school for was to learn how to be creative and to learn about the creative process, and then he applied it in all kinds of other different fields. And so I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. You're going through school. The Beatles, Mick Jagger, all those guys, they all went to art school. That's where they started off. But I think they were learning how to be this association of putting different elements of things together. I think that was a great training. And when he said that, it was like, yeah, I went to art school to learn how to be creative. And then you apply that creativity, that artistry into all the different parts of your life. Like your gardens, or like your pottery, or like your, you know, the flavor of your soup, the flavor of your studio, how all those things work.
It's a combination, though. I mean, I think it's also technical skill.
Oh, right.
You know, the school I went to was pretty cutting edge, but also pretty a strong foundation.
Oh, that's good. You know, places so, and sources. And
so like drawing, life drawing, anatomy, life sculpture, life painting, along with other kinds of painting and art history, always together.
Oh, that's
together.
Good. That's good.
So.
Yeah, ideas. And plus you've got the other side of the of what I call the grammar of art, you know, mm-hmm. the ability to draw. Did you do cadavers and did you do muscles?
No. Not at the art school.
Not at the art school.
We didn't have a science program up there.
Okay. Sometimes they do. Yeah, some people will do that. Just a different way of working. When I was going through mm-hmm. school, it was simply just get in there and draw. And then when you need to learn something, then I'll teach you that thing that you need to learn. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, just keep going. Rather than here's all the things you need to learn and now take off. It was like kind of a step-by-step as mm-hmm. you felt a vacuum and a need, then it would come into it. It's like, well, that's a different way of teaching. But
that had to be the 60s.
It was. Uh-huh. It was. How'd you know that?
I was part of that.
Were you?
Mm-hmm.
The late 60s for me. Mm-hmm. It was a great time. It was marvelous. And the freedom of it and the discipline of it and the kind of grooviness of it, too. Do you know what I mean? You probably don't.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And the music was fabulous, too. It was a marvelous time.
It was good.
And then of
you
course,
guys are sounding, you're dating yourselves.
Well, that's okay. That's where we're that's where we're
that's
from.
That's where it's at.
Yeah,
I wasn't very old in the 60s.
No.
College?
No. No.
High school?
Uh-uh.
Really?
Yeah, not even.
Grade school.
Grade school, you're kidding.
Grade school.
Huh.
But I can't remember, but I was, yeah, I was just barely in the 60s.
Huh.
But.
All those changes and all the hairstyles and all the clothing. And, you know, I describe it as everything was up for reconsideration, everything, you know, and all painting and all art and everything was like, well, and music, except, of course, for Rembrandt. He couldn't touch Jan and maybe Mondrian. And, Mondrian, no, Morandi.
Yes,
Morandi. Do you like Mondrian?
He's not in my pantheon.
No.
I mean, he's a heavy hitter.
He's a heavy hitter, but he's not first team.
Not in my team.
How about Vermeer?
Not bad. Is this my art test?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're a painter, so it's like, and I think of you as a pure painter. So it's like, okay, for great painting, I think Vermeer. Oh, we've reached the end of our journey. What advice do you have for young artists, Megan?
Oh. Well, let's see. The last time I was here, I thought that artists should try not to be talked out of being artists, that there's plenty of things, really fabulous things.
Good.
They can do.
Well, I think we tell the kids to make art that matters. I think we can change culture with what we do.
So absolutely correct.
Bring it on.
Very good. Kristen and Megan Quinn, thank you very much. That's it for us today on Art Talks. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. As always, I'm Bruce Carter. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.